From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. Peaches and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, Hollywood is gaga for 3D, thanks to the success of films like Avatar and Alice in Wonderland. But not all 3D is created equal, and a legendary producer says the audience doesn't care. Plus, a Sony expert talks the difference between pure 3D and films that are not 2D. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stay close, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined in the studio by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hey, John, let's get real.
Let's get real D.
Let's get real D. Real D, which is the company that has fueled the exploding number of 3D screens around the country, is going to go public. It's going to offer stock to the public. It is a big IPO and the first one in a long time.
And as much as $1 billion. I mean, 3D is obviously huge for the studios. Somebody has to be converting the theaters, and there are a number of companies that are doing it. Real D has done a great job. They've spent a lot of money creating the technology that will not only convert theaters, but also they're starting to work in television and see if they can do 3D viewing for the home. And they've got a lot of investors, and now seems to be the perfect time to cash out. And we'll see how well it goes. I suspect it might go a little bit better than the IPO we talked about several weeks ago for the film department.
Yes, the film department. It's an independent company run by independent film veteran Mark Gill, making a sort of Hail Mary attempt to raise money through a stock offering. And there are just a bunch of these companies that are really on the ropes right now. And one of the questions is, will there be an MGM? And if so, what kind of MGM?
Yeah. And who is their savior? Is it Relativity Media and the hedge fund money that Ryan Kavanaugh has used to create that company? I mean, Relativity is a prominent financier. They've been very active in Universal Slate. They bought Rogue. They have apparently, although you keep hearing doubts about their money, they apparently have a lot of money. And if they're the savior of MGM, I guess that means by some token that everybody else has kind of fallen away.
You know, I look at these comments that people write on the internet and say they keep saying MGM is like, you know, the drug addict that keeps being enabled by people giving the company money. And, you know, with its most recent entry being Hot Tub Time Machine, you do say at some point, of course they do have The Hobbit. Of course they do have the Bond.
And James Bond, right.
Yeah, stuff. So, you know, it's not like there's nothing there. But boy, that company hasn't really worked, I think, in the entire time I've been covering this industry.
No, and I would say the same, and certainly in recent years, been true for Miramax. So I think you have companies that are a little bit on the decline, trying to get prices that are kind of hinged toward a turnaround. And maybe that turnaround isn't going to come, and maybe that means the money isn't going to come.
And just briefly, Miramax also for sale just last week. The bids came in. The high bidder, again, David Bergstein, another besieged guy whose money is in question, and a couple of other bidders, including the Weinstein brothers who founded it. So all of these are, you know, question marks over really that, you know, the stuff that movie lovers who don't love popcorn movies, some of these companies make those movies and they're all having a heck of a time.
And I think the seller's going to say, pay me in cash.
Yeah, exactly. I want cash. I want it in escrow. Moving on to a slightly more successful media, or at least clearly, manifestly successful media person, Oprah. Oprah has announced her plans for this new OWN, O-W-N, Oprah Winfrey Network. Do we say OWN? I don't know. Do we say OWN? Do you say OWN, John?
I'm going to say Oprah Winfrey Network or OWN. I have to own my OWN.
Well, she's going to own some hefty money when she gets done with this thing. But she's announced several moves, the most notable of which was announced last week in the LA Times, John, in the Wall Street Journal. Darn them. Which is her nighttime talk show. And there's, I guess, a certain amount of question as to whether this works. There's been a lot of talk about how big and hot cable is. But, you know, can Oprah do it in prime time?
Well, and also, I think as the journal story pointed out, well, nighttime is a very different audience. I mean, in daytime, you have maybe women who are staying at home, homemakers. Nighttime, you're competing with American Idol. You're competing with a whole number of reality show, Dancing with the Stars. Some of them have their own inspirational stories. I mean, what Oprah is trying to create is her own cable television network. And the question is, what worked in the middle of the day may not necessarily work at night. And she's got a lineup of programs. She's got a Shania Twain show. She's got a story about the creative process. She's got a reality show from Mark Burnett about becoming the next TV star. And then she's got a show called Masterclass that has both Jay-Z and Condoleezza Rice scheduled to appear on it.
That's the one that sort of stops me cold. It's like, okay, Masterclass. What do Condoleezza Rice and Jay-Z have? I mean, okay, maybe I will watch one episode of that.
I think what they have in common, they've both been invited by Oprah Winfrey to be on a new show. I think Shania Twain is this is a woman whose best friend had an affair with her husband, and that is the premise of the show, which sounds like it's a good segment of Oprah. But whether or not it's a long-running series, I think, is a different question. But this is one of the biggest new bets in cable television. It's Discovery Communications. It's a $100 million investment.
And long aborting, too. It took a while to get her into the mix here, and now she says
she's
in.
Oprah Winfrey is probably one of the best-known personalities in all media, and certainly incredibly attractive on television. So this is a bold stroke. And listen, if any personality can make a new cable network go, I would say Oprah is probably it.
And I believe that is all the banter that we have time for. So thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Oh, yeah. 3D movies have been clashing like titans over access to the still limited number of 3D screens. But not all 3D is created equal. Purists say you have to shoot with bulky 3D camera rigs, which are still unfamiliar to many in the industry. So a lot of what you might have seen was shot conventionally in plain old 2D and then converted to 3D later. Fans and filmmakers are pondering and even arguing, is there really a meaningful difference? The highest profile among the purists is, unsurprisingly, James Cameron, a man in love with 3D technology. He planned Avatar in 3D from the get-go and shot it that way. But no one was even thinking about 3D when Warner made Clash of the Titans. Only after Avatar blasted off at the box office did the studio go for a quick conversion, just at the last minute. Alice in Wonderland represents a middle way. It was planned from the start to be in 3D, and it was shot with that in mind, but Tim Burton filmed it conventionally in 2D and converted it later. So, which is best? The movie that really pushed people's buttons in this debate was Clash of the Titans, with its last-minute slapdash conversion. The work was savaged by critics, and film geeks online made their displeasure clear. But audiences didn't seem to care. The film made $60 million in the U.S. in its opening weekend. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about the virtues of the various approaches. But first, venerable producer Dick Zanuck. He speaks with some authority here. He's a producer of Alice in Wonderland and an executive producer of Clash of the Titans. Zanuck has an impressive list of conventional movie credits, from Jaws to Driving Miss Daisy to Tim Burton's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I asked him how this whole new technology is affecting his life.
Well, the only thing that's affecting my life is these incredible grosses.
That's a good problem to have,
both
right?
On Alice and on Clash of the Titans.
Wow, you know, how does it feel to fail in Hollywood?
Yeah, no, I mean, believe it or not, I'm not bragging, but it's a fact. I've had the 4 of the last 5 weeks as the number one picture, 3 with the...
Alice,
mm-hmm. And then we skipped a week with the DreamWorks picture, and then last weekend with Clash.
In terms of Alice, how different was it to do this? That was a decision to do 3D from the beginning, right?
Well, it was different because we agreed, when we came on, we being Tim Burton and myself, came on to Alice. The initial meetings that we had with Disney, there was no question that it was going to be in 3D. And in terms of Clash, we made the picture having no idea that it was going to be 3D converted.
Right. And why did you decide with Alice to start to do it as a conversion?
Well, because Alice is a unique situation because we only shot with people, with our actors, for 40 days. I'm not talking about the beginning of the picture, you know, at the Grand Estate.
Right.
And the end when she comes out of the hole. But when she's in the hole, we only shot with the actors on green screen. Everything else, the background, the animals, that was all animated and computer generated. So there wasn't any point really of shooting in 3D with actors standing in front of green screen.
Right.
It was just, we were actually in a green world. It wasn't just a green screen. Everything was green. That's the floors, the ceiling. So when you entered our set, it was all green, giving Tim the flexibility of shooting anywhere he wanted. And quite frankly, after a few days, everybody started really feeling it. It's a disconcerting atmosphere.
Now, Avatar had not come out when you were having that conversation.
Oh, no.
So how was it that you guys said it has to be 3D? What was the idea behind that?
That was really something that was presented, as I say, to Tim and myself in the very first meeting, and he just immediately agreed. There was no hesitation. He just thought...
He got it right away.
Yeah, mm-hmm. he got it. So
Disney was the one, I mean, the old regime at Disney came up with the idea.
Yeah.
They came to you and said, let's do it in 3D, and Tim said, fabulous, I love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when it came to Clash of the Titans, I understand this also was Warner Brothers' idea to do that conversion.
This was Warner Brothers' idea, and that was post-Avatar.
Right.
And post, I don't know whether Alice had come out yet or not. I don't think so.
But
I don't
certainly
think so.
We one felt it coming.
It was, yeah, one felt it coming. The conversion time was much shorter for Clash.
And what do you think? I mean, Clash of the Titans, of course, it stirred tons of controversy to convert it. Would you want to do it that way all over again? I mean, obviously now it worked, so, but maybe it would have worked if you hadn't.
You know, one never knows. I think certainly in terms of the additional gross, because the 3D houses are outgrossing not only the difference in ticket price, but people are going to the 3D house, filling that up, where the 2D house right next door in a complex is filled up after people can't get into the 3D.
Right, the 3D goes first.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Were the filmmakers a bit uncomfortable because they were being, you know, excoriated?
Well, I don't know whether they were being excoriated or whether the 3D company, you know, took a terrible beating.
Right.
It's interesting that the same process, different people, but the same process was used on Alice, but with more time.
Right.
We didn't hear one peep from anybody on Alice.
Right. Nobody said it looks terrible.
No, nobody said. As a matter of fact, they said it looks amazing.
Right, the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Dick Zanuck. He's a producer of Alice in Wonderland and an executive producer of Clash of the Titans. Both are 3D movies, but they were made in very different ways. Alice was made with 3D in mind from the start, while Titans was converted at the last minute as an afterthought. As a producer, is there part of you that says, gee, I wish they wouldn't have taken this movie and made it the object of so much controversy? Or do you just think, hey, you know, it's good enough, people liked it, and I'm happy?
You know, if you look at the exit polls, and which we do, people are really enjoying this picture. And very rarely does anybody come out and say the 3D was sloppy or anything. I mean, critically, we took... That part of it took a beating.
Mm-hmm.
But audiences, I don't think, care about that so much.
Obviously, if you were doing it now, you would plan it differently. So
absolutely.
Right. Let me ask you this. There's an argument in the community, in the Hollywood community, saying, well, but if you do that kind of Clash of the Titans conversion, the audience becomes more sophisticated. They start thinking it's a ripoff. They may not want to pay for it. You think it's the kind of thing where, you know, you do a couple Clash of Titans, okay, but you don't want to make a habit of it? Or do you think that that's, again, just an obsession of Hollywood?
Look, nobody can project that far. Certainly, I can't. But I think, and I may disagree with Jeffrey, and we've had conversations about this long ago, he seems to think that everything is going to be in 3D.
Right, that's Jeffrey Katzenberg's point of view.
And we've talked about this, and I've said to him, Jeffrey, I've made Driving Miss Daisy. It wouldn't have helped it. It may have hurt it, it being in 3D.
That would be a weird, that's a weird image,
And he was saying, he said to me, come out and see 12 Angry Men, because we've converted 12 Angry Men, and you're right in there with the jury and all of that, and it's a great experience. I never went out and took
him up on
that.
You didn't do it.
But incidentally, we took scenes from pictures that had been converted before we totally signed off on the 3D thing.
Yeah, way you took a look
at it. Early days, we couldn't tell the difference.
It was that good.
Yeah, and I remember saying to Tim at the time, there's probably only one man on Earth, that's Cameron, who could tell you which is 3D and which is converted 3D. They all look the same to me.
James Cameron, of course.
we couldn't tell any difference.
Just to return to Titans for a second, I mean, when they brought it up, what was the reaction on the end? It was Legendary, I guess, as the film company. What was the reaction?
Warner's and Legendary.
Right. When Warner's brought it up, what was the response initially? Wasn't there an initial thinking, now you want to do this?
No, everybody thought favorably of it. It was post-Avatar, and that Clash seemed right for a picture like Clash of the Titans.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So nobody said, oh, my God, not at all. The studio took not a long time, but it wasn't shooting from the hip kind of decision. They gave it a lot of study and analysis, and we did some 3D tests. We had some scenes converted. And so it wasn't just immediate process, let's go convert this.
Well, was the jury unanimous, or did somebody
I
don't like it?
The jury seemed to be unanimous. So, mm-hmm. We tested some of the action scenes, and it seemed to be a good fit and a good decision. And then, the studio finally signed off on it. But nobody resisted it at all.
Well, you are definitely riding the wave, dominating the box office. Richard Zanuck is the veteran producer of a long list of films. His latest include Alice in Wonderland and Clash of the Titans. Both films were shot in 2D and converted to 3D in post-production. And thank you so much for talking to us about this today.
Okay, thank you, Kim. It's been a nice conversation.
As the public laps up 3D and the studio suits swig that 3D Kool-Aid, there's a mighty chase after all the money that will be spent on the format. Unsurprisingly, Sony sees a potentially golden opportunity to sell everything from cameras to movie makers to 3D TV sets for all the rest of us. So the company has opened a new 3D technology center at its studios in Culver City. The idea is to teach nervous filmmakers how to use the cameras free of charge and get them on the bandwagon.
We're rolling, and mark it, Frank. Okay, here we go. Ready? And go ahead, take those flags out. Now, from what we learned yesterday, how do we feel about that parallax back there?
Great.
We have great shape on the foreground, right? The background is just about unwatchable.
So, coming up after a short break, we talk to the head of Sony's new 3D Technology Center. This is The Business from KCRW. Give us your thoughts about 3D by writing us at thebusiness@kcrw.com or go to the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. It looks like 3D is here to stay, and Sony is teaching people on camera crews, for free, that the Sony way is the best way into the stereoscopic future. The company has opened a 3D technology center. It's headed by one of the few guys in Hollywood who's been at the center of the new 3D since its inception. Buzz Hayes worked at Sony Imageworks, a visual effects house that has converted a number of movies from 2D to 3D, like Beowulf, G-Force, and Alice in Wonderland. But now he's chief instructor at Sony's school, teaching people how to shoot in 3D. Talk us just basically through the differences logistically and financially, I guess, between shooting in 3D and converting from 2D to 3D.
Sure. The technology for shooting 3D has evolved tremendously just in the last couple of years. And, you know, everybody wants to know how much more does it cost and how much longer does it take. There's really not enough data because there haven't been enough pictures done in this modern way to know that. So it's been a little bit of a gamble for people to decide one way or the other. But based on my experience, I always recommend that people shoot 3D wherever possible, because if it works, then you're much farther ahead in terms of production time and post-production time and cost. And if it doesn't work, we know how to fix that. A couple of years ago, I probably would have had a different answer, because the conversion stuff was just an idea, really, and only a few people had attempted it. After we got through doing G-Force, which had a significant amount of conversion in it, we realized that it was a possible tool, although it has its own issues. It's time-consuming. It's relatively expensive, regardless of what you hear. And I think to do it well, it takes time.
So your position, I mean, obviously Sony is very engaged in promoting 3D shooting and 3D everything mm-hmm. at this point through to TV eventually in your home. Mm-hmm. But your position would be that it is not actually so clear that converting is cheaper and easier than shooting in 3D.
Yeah, it's not at all. I mean, we've done a ton of research into the whole idea. And granted, there's a lot of companies coming out of the woodwork that want to do this work. But by and large, most of them don't have production experience. So they don't understand production flow. And when you're trying to convert a movie, you know, if it's a current action genre film, you're probably talking somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 shots that you have to deal with in a relatively short period of time. And we noticed when we first started testing these companies that most of them were under the impression that you just sort of throw it out there once and they're done. And we were like, well, no, actually, we need to fix these things. The nose on this character doesn't look right, or the hair doesn't look right, or whatever. So when they started saying, oh, yeah, we can do this really inexpensively, they started to realize that, well, yeah, if there's no human intervention, we can do it cheaply. But if somebody actually cares what it looks like, it does take time and money.
Well, what is your take on the Clash of the Titans controversy? They said they did that for about $5 million, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's right along the lines of what we've been predicting that these things will cost.
And let me just, before you go ahead, let me just spell it out in case people have not been focusing on this. Warner Brothers made a late decision to convert Clash of the Titans and make it a 3D movie when it was shot in 2D. And a lot of people have complained that it didn't look good and wasn't worth it. Have you looked at it? What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I do think that...
I mean, it's not your thing, right?
Right. It's not my thing. It's not my thing. Here's my basic feeling about conversion. Mm-hmm. It has a look. It's a stylized look, no matter how you slice it. And one of the challenges we're always faced with is there's an underlying technology to much of this, but there's also an underlying technique to a lot of it that may be hand-tooled, you know, that just involves a lot of people to do it. Regardless, when we look at these demos, sometimes we see some really horrible 3D, but we don't know why. We can't tell if it's the technology or if it's their execution of it. So there's a whole genre of this stuff that I refer to as not 2D. It's clearly not 3D, and it's clearly not 2D.
Other.
It's somewhere like stuck in the middle.
We've talked to a couple of people who are working behind the camera, mm-hmm. and they're telling us that the 3D rigs are hard to use and that they're not, they feel that they're doing more work and not getting paid anything extra. And, you know, do you find that reluctance? Is that an argument against doing it in 3D and just using conversion?
No, I think, well, it's interesting because, you know, we just launched this training effort here at Sony, training cinematographers specifically, and we're working with the local 600 Cinematographers Guild folks. They have, I think, what, 6,500 members around the world, and they're all extremely interested in understanding this technology because a lot of their folks are on the front lines of having to make these decisions along with whoever else is involved in the film. So what we're doing is giving them access to the tools because in our experience of working with 3D, you really have to work with it for a while to understand its ramifications from a storytelling perspective. It's a very different paradigm. It's not just a new camera to use or a different kind of lens or some new kind of light. It's a different paradigm in terms of how we tell stories. It's really no more complicated than shooting in 2D HD. It's the same gear. It's just you got two cameras.
So you think it might actually change the sort of movies? I mean, now everybody
yep.
figures it's just popcorn movies and that'll
yep.
be 3D, right?
No, I actually do because there's a certain truth to the image that 2D will never have, because 2D is an interpretation. No matter how much you're trying to step away from any kind of interpretation, it's still compressing that world into a 2D representation. And by photographing stuff in 3D, you realize it can be very real. We had an interesting situation on Beowulf where the MPAA decided they weren't going to give it its final rating until they saw certain scenes that they had deemed objectionable in 3D.
Wow, interesting. Because
they thought 3D might actually manifest itself as more graphic.
Aha. Uh-huh. And how did that play itself out?
As it turned out, the particular things they were worried about had nothing to do with the graphic nature of it in 3D, luckily, but it got us to thinking about it.
Yeah, you can see the potential.
Yeah.
So in the future, are you thinking that there will be a place for 2D conversions and things shot in 3D both?
There's even a place for it now. It's just it has to be done well, I think, in order, even in a heavily stylized look, it has to be done well. And frankly, the conversion work is hard. I mean, if you talk to some of these conversion companies who have done more than one film, you'll find that they have realized how hard the work really is. And in a lot of cases, I think their prices have gone up, not down, because they realize how hard it is.
You know, Jim Cameron is obviously a huge defender of shooting in 3D because he kind of had a lot to do with making it so
sure.
Such a big deal in Avatar. And yet he's going to do Titanic as a conversion. And you said it's a stylized look. What do you think that'll look like? You think it'll work?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, he's got a good eye, and he's not going to let shoddy work go by. I mean, that's why he's Jim Cameron. So if anybody's going to do a good job of it, he will. It's not going to be easy. One of the hardest things to do is transparencies.
What is a transparency? I'm sorry.
Anything through glass or through water or anything like that.
Oh, water. What does that have to do with Titanic?
All the Titanic was at the bottom of a big pool of water.
Right.
So, you know, whenever there's particulate matter that's kicked up from the sea floor or anything like that, that stuff is really hard to convert in a convincing way. And it's possible, but it's very time-consuming. It's just ironic that he's coming out saying that conversion's a horrible thing.
Yeah, and yet, yes.
Yeah.
Well, he's obviously talking about a specific type of conversion,
yeah, exactly.
not Jim Cameron conversion.
Like anything else, like with photography, there's good photography and there's bad photography. Mm-hmm. And I'm more interested, honestly, in what the public thinks of these things than, because from a purist perspective, we can all sit here on our high thrones and make all these pronouncements about stuff. But if the public is liking a certain thing, as long as it's not causing harm or mayhem, then, you know, at a certain point, we have to start listening to what they say, too.
But when you see the box office from Titans, do you go, well, obviously they liked it?
Well, but I could say that about a lot of films that don't match my taste. You know, like, oh, my God, they did such a horrible job, and then they make, you know, $10 billion in the first weekend. It's like, well, is that validation? I don't know. And I was talking to other studio folks recently after this movie, and I said, do you think this box office is validation? And in their mind, no, it isn't. That's popular taste at the moment, but it's not validation for any given process. Because in this case, I think, honestly, enough people were going to go see that film, even if it was in 2D. It
right.
would have made a difference.
Buzz Hayes is Senior Vice President of and the Chief Instructor for the Sony 3D Technology Center. Buzz, thank you so much.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Darby Maloney is our associate producer. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Groman. Special thanks today to Harriet Ells. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. If you have any questions or comments about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com. You can also listen to this or any past program and comment about the show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button from our media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.